The Internal Revenue Service has seen major funding cuts over the last 10 years, leading to understaffing and a spike in unpaid taxes. Part of the Inflation Reduction Act passed last week aims to tackle that problem with $8 billion over the next decade, going to rebuild staffing at the IRS. Want to hear what you think at 800-642-1234. Do you think the IRS needs that additional money? And I misspoke, $80 billion, not $8 billion over the next 10 years. Have you tried to get help from the IRS with a tax problem and encountered long waits on the phone? Do you want to see more enforcement efforts for higher income taxpayers, more audits? Do you worry that you might see more audits if staffing goes up? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. Janet Holtzblatt is a senior fellow at the Urban Brookings Tax Policy Center. She worked on tax policy issues for 3 decades in the federal government. Janet, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you, Rob, for having me.
Can you talk about what we've seen in the IRS prior to this bill passing, this attempt to add more funding to the IRS? What have we seen in terms of funding and staffing at the IRS?
It's been tough for the IRS. Since 2010, they've seen their budget be cut by over 20% after adjusting for inflation. And the group that has really been cut most deeply is enforcement, always a popular part of IRS. And that's translated into some major reductions in staff. Since 2010, the IRS had 95,000 employees, and now it's down to about 79,000. If you go even further back in time to 30 years ago, they had 117,000 employees. And you see a cutback like that, and you think, maybe there's been an improvement in productivity, or maybe they've moved to more investments in computers, or maybe they've had less responsibilities. None of that's true. The IRS technology has become increasingly obsolete. In some areas, they still rely on programming languages like COBOL that date back over half a century ago. And then there have been these deep funding cuts since 2010 that I referred to. And along with those funding cuts, they had a hiring freeze. And that's part of the reason they've had this large reduction in staff. During a time when many of their staff were reaching retirement age and retired, there was a 7-year period that they couldn't replace them. So we entered into the pandemic era with an IRS that was already in a very weak position. And then the pandemic hit, and like the rest of the world, things kind of stalled at the IRS. So that's really the position that they're in right now, and why this infusion of the money is really making up for a long period of dryness that they've experienced.
I want to talk about the impact of those cuts and the possible funding. First of all, on sort of let's call them everyday taxpayers, we'll call it middle income and below. What have they seen when it comes to processing times for refunds, when it comes to problem resolution, if they need to contact the IRS because they were billed incorrectly or something like that?
Well, that's kind of a twofold, threefold question. The good news for taxpayers, and sometimes there is good news for taxpayers, is that during the pandemic, Congress authorized 3 waves of economic stimulus payments, the economic impact payments, and they also put in place advanced payments last year of the child tax credit. And the thing that most impressed me about those efforts was that the IRS got that money out in record time. In the past, when the IRS has been tasked with that kind of responsibility, it's taken several months to construct the infrastructure and get ready to send out the funds. And this time they were getting the money out on the economic impact payments in very quickly after the law was enacted, within like 2 weeks. And so in that sense, the IRS performed very well for people. On the other hand, if you're working with limited resources and you're doing well in one area, other areas falter. And again, the pandemic was a real complexity, so complication. So in those initial months after the country basically shut down in March of 2020, the IRS too kind of closed down. And if you were filing a return on paper or you had any kind of correspondence with the IRS that had to go through the mails, that first several months after the pandemic, when nobody was there to open the mail, it started piled up in trailers in the parking lots that they had rented. And so even now, the IRS is still in catch-up mode on those paper returns. It handles them first in, first out. So, the returns that had been piled up, they've been taken care of. But when you take care of the returns in the backlog, more returns get back up. And so even right now, as of August 5th, the IRS still had about 10 million returns from the 2021 filing season, or rather 10 million returns, 10 million 2021 tax returns that had not been processed yet. If you file electronically, you're in pretty good shape, but it's those paper returns where the refunds have really gone slow. The other issue is that with all of the economic impact payments, the child tax credit, all these other aspects of the pandemic added to the normal business, the IRS was facing record number of phone calls in the last two years, and they haven't been answered. And that is, that really hits hard. It hits hard with people on the phone trying to get through. I sat on the phone for 40 minutes a couple of years ago during the pandemic, and I did get my call answered, but we didn't get to an answer. But it just adds, to taxpayer frustration, but it also adds to the frustration of the IRS, who sincerely, I believe, really wants to do well by the American taxpayer.
Talking to Janet Holzblatt with the Urban Brookings Tax Policy Center, looking at new funding in the just signed Inflation Reduction Act for the IRS. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts, your questions, maybe your experiences. If you also had a long wait on the phone, what do you think of the idea of putting more money into that kind of service and into tax enforcement? 800-642-1234 is the number. That's 800-642-1234. Janet, let's talk about that enforcement side of things. You've researched what I think you've called a tax gap before, what people are supposed to be paying in taxes, what they actually do pay in taxes, especially at upper levels of income. What does this funding mean there?
The IRS has said that a portion of this money will be used largely to target audits on high-income taxpayers, the very wealthy, complicated partnerships, and big corporations. And you can see the need for that in terms of what happened to audit rates during this period. It used to be, even going as far back as 2010, it used to be that for the large corporations, the largest corporations, about 100%, all of them basically were audited each year. In the course of a decade, that's dropped to 50%. If you look at taxpayers, individual taxpayers who have more than $1 million in gross income, in 2010, 8.4% of them were subject to audit. Now it's down to 2.4%. So if the IRS can marshal these resources and not just and target these people, you could see a real effort in terms of ensuring that the wealthy and the big companies pay what they actually owe. Now, it isn't just a question of increasing the number of audits. It's also increasing the quality of the audits. We've seen also during this period a large increase in the number of audits of big companies, of large corporations that end up in the favor of the taxpayer. So in 2019, nearly 40% of audits of large corporations ended up in taxpayers' favor. Now, that either means that the IRS is targeting the wrong people, selecting the wrong corporations to audit, or it means they're being outgunned by the kinds of sophisticated, well-skilled army of tax advisors that the corporations can afford to hire. And that also means then that in addition to more audits, you need to be able to hire the kinds of sophisticated, well-trained, experienced examiners who can go head to head with the kinds of audit, the kinds of advisors that the companies have at their disposal.
We're talking to Tax Policy Center Senior Fellow Janet Holtzblatt about the Inflation Reduction Act as it relates to the IRS, a boost in funding there over the next 10 years, looking at what it means for the IRS, for taxpayers, and for tax enforcement. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you glad to see more money going to the IRS? They don't win a lot of popularity contests. Are you worried about what that money could mean when it comes to how they handle tax enforcement? Do you have questions about how all this stuff works? Call it now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We're picking up our conversation with Janet Holtzblatt, senior fellow at the Urban Brookings Tax Policy Center. She's explaining how the $80 billion added to the IRS for the next 10 years under the Inflation Reduction Act will affect the agency and taxpayers. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts on your funding, your questions about it, maybe your experiences seeking to contact the IRS lately. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Let's bring on a caller. Linda is with us in Wausau. Linda, hi.
Hi.
What did you want to bring up, Linda?
Okay, in March 11, 2021, a COVID-related American Rescue Plan, Congress made up to $10,200 of 2000 unemployment benefits non-taxable for individuals whose modified adjusted gross income was less than $150,000. I am still waiting to get back what was deducted from my unemployment.
And you've made phone calls, I'm guessing, Linda?
Yes, most of the time you cannot get through. They'll say, we're having a busy day, try calling another time. I did get through. I had to wait 7 hours.
Oh, my God.
They said they had not. They finally got through to me. They said they had not reviewed my file. They have no idea when they will. I finally contacted my congressman, and they are getting the same response.
Linda, thanks for the call. And I'm sorry to hear that, Janet, maybe that's on the extreme end, but a lot of people have stories of that kind of long wait right now.
Yeah, I mean, this was an interesting and frustrating example of Congress enacting a provision in the middle of the filing season so that people who filed early, which many people do in order to get a refund, were caught up in this. In this case, the IRS was allowing, the government was allowing people to not have to pay taxes on a certain amount of their unemployment insurance benefits, which many people had to receive in 2020. But they enacted this provision in the middle of the filing season. So people like Linda, the caller, had already filed their tax return and had included the unemployment insurance as part of their taxable income and paid tax on it. And then in March, this law passed and it turned out that that income was not taxable. So the IRS has had to go through returns and figure out how much they were owed. If the return was fairly simple, they were able to probably turn it around quickly. But if there were some complexities in the return, it got held up. And I was just reading about this on the IRS website this afternoon, and they're still held up on those. So sadly, Linda is not alone in her experience on it, but the advice they give you on the website is don't call, be patient. And, you know, it's frustrating. I understand it. But again, this is partly an artifact of Congress changing the law in the middle of the filing season, affecting returns that had already been filed. And then two, the fact that the IRS is so backed up that without, you know, they just haven't been able to do everything that they are tasked with doing. And this is an argument for why more resources are necessary. It doesn't help the caller in the short run or other people who are in that situation, though.
Linda, thanks for calling in and good luck to you. Thanks for calling at 800-642-1234. Jenna, Republicans who voted against the act as a whole and these provisions in particular have been, their public statements have been along the lines of giving these resources to the IRS means more enforcement targeting middle class people. Some very heated like claims that they'll show up with guns. But the gist is this means more audits for you, middle class taxpayer. As you're seeing what passed here, is that likely to come to pass?
The answer is it depends. I believe that the administration and the Treasury are fairly committed to their goal that the bulk of the money will be to, well, the money will be used to increase the audits of the three target groups, the rich, the partnerships, the corporations, the large corporations. But there is some language in what they have written as recently as this last couple of weeks in letters that the secretary has sent the commission, Secretary of Treasury has sent the commissioner of the IRS, in which they say that audits for people whose income is less than $400,000 will not see an increase in audit rates relative to the historic levels or relative to recent levels. And there are two issues in that statement that I believe the Republicans and others have latched on to as perhaps proof that maybe other people other than those with income less than $400,000 will be audited. One is this question of what does it mean to draw that line at actual income at $400,000 when the IRS may not know if someone's actual income is $400,000 without doing an audit. The answer there, one hopes, the aspiration, is that the IRS, you know, continues to refine its audit selection criteria so that it's better at picking up people who may be reporting less than $400,000, but the IRS has a pretty good idea that they actually were underreporting their income. So that's an aspiration in terms of where improvements in technology and staffing could help. The second is, what do they mean by recent years or historic levels? Well, this gets to this issue of, are we at, you know, the point that we're at, that after a decade of cuts between 2010 and 2019, you saw a reduction of the audit rates across the board for all individuals from 1.1% to 0.4%. And then you had a pandemic, which slowed everything down and may have caused a further decline. I don't have the numbers. And so the question is, and I think this is the key in the word historic, is would they continue audits at the post-budget cut level, at the post-pandemic level? From my perspective, that's not really necessarily a good strategy going forward because the audit rates got so low. So it's possible when they say no increase relative to historic levels, that they may mean relative to some year prior to when things got as low as they currently are, but they haven't really given us specifications as to what that means. On the other hand, I don't think that, as I said at the onset, I don't think their target though is, you know, their target for increased enforcement relative to what has been done further back, I think that still remains the three groups, the wealthy, the complicated partnerships, and the corporations, the large corporations.
We heard from Matt in Madison who says his buddy was an IRS agent and earned back his entire annual salary in fraud cases in the first 3 months of the year. And that takes me to one of the questions I wanted to wrap up with, Janet. The idea here is that this is going to pay for itself and then some by doing more of this enforcement. Do you think that's likely?
I do. I've done research on that particular area in the past, and you do observe from historical data that there is a positive return on investment. You give the IRS more money, you will get even more money back in return. The Congressional Budget Office estimated that with this $80 billion investment, that the IRS would get an additional $200 billion. So on net, this program, which costs $80 billion, on net would give yield back to the government after taking out the $80 billion, would yield back $124 billion. Now, that's just in terms of direct enforcement money, the money that they would increase in collections. It doesn't take into account any impact that it might have in terms of potential deterrence. So, I do believe that this money will return more money to the government than the actual cost of it.
Janet, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Okay, thank you for having me. And I'm glad to talk to Madison, where I lived for some years.
Well, welcome back to Wisconsin, then. That's Janet Holzblatt, senior fellow at the Urban Brookings Tax Policy Center, who worked on tax policy issues for 3 decades in the federal government. She talked to us about a part of the Inflation Reduction Act that boosts funding for the IRS and how it'll impact the IRS and taxpayers.